Welcome back to Exploring Boys Education, a regular podcast produced by IBSC for leaders and educators in boys' schools around the world. I'm Bruce Collins, IBSC Director of Membership Engagement. In this episode, we're diving into a critical issue impacting boys today: online gambling and sports betting. We're joined by Saul Malik, who brings a unique and powerful perspective to this conversation. Saul's personal experiences have driven his passion for raising awareness about youth gambling, and he'll be sharing his insights on the prevalence of this issue, the challenges it presents for boys' schools, and what we can do to support our boys. Before I'm joined by Saul, I'd like to highlight some upcoming IBSC programming. The IBSC NICEACE Educating Boys Conference takes place on April 1st at the Browning School in New York. The keynote speaker at this one-day event is Matt Engler-Carlson. On April 28th, IBSC will host a webinar focusing on the strategic design for well-being in boys' schools with David Bott and Justin Robinson from the Wellbeing Distillery. Registration for this event will open soon. Then, visit our Ideas Lab page to see current offerings in March and May, including an Ideas Lab for athletic directors of boys' schools in North America and for middle leaders in boys' schools. But now, I'm joined by our guest for today's conversation, Saul Malik. It's really great to be connecting with Saul again. After our initial conversation, Saul, wonderful to see you again and great to have you on the podcast. And as we were talking, you know, just preparing to record this, I was struck by how many of us in the boys' school environment are probably aware of some of the challenges that tech brings to boys, but possibly not fully aware of online gambling and how much it is impacting the boys in our care. So really important, I believe, to be speaking with you today. So welcome to Exploring Boys Education.
Thanks, Bruce. It's really a great time to be here, especially with the Super Bowl having just wrapped up, you know, billions of dollars on the table with all the sports betting going on. And surely some of our boys were contributing to that figure. So it's very timely.
Yeah, I have no doubts. And in other parts of the world, most likely too, you know, whatever their sport of choice is. So Saul, I'd like to start off a little bit just by giving folk who are listening some context, particularly around your interest in this complex issue of youth gambling. And obviously, for those who know you, and I know you have spoken at some of our schools in the US, but your experience as a boy and a young man has shaped your perspective on this issue. So I'd love to just hear a little bit about that and why you're so passionate about this issue.
Sure. I mean, people rightfully think when they hear that I speak on this topic that I must have had some personal involvement in gambling myself. And as I said, that is correct. My gambling really took form in college. So I was a sophomore in college, 19 years old. I was introduced to sports betting online through a friend of mine. And the reason I'd say I'm so passionate about it is because I recognize just how insidious the whole process was from that first sports bet in September of 2017 all the way up till my last bet in July of 2019. The whole process was so gradual, and it just felt to me that a lot of young men could just kind of venture off into gambling without any sort of thought of the consequences or what could come next. And so the fact that I developed a problem very quickly and wasn't even really aware of how serious it was becoming has really inspired me. And I'll say quickly to add to that, just as time has gone on, the products being pushed out by the gambling industry seem to have gotten a lot more complex. And so I think that these young men are in an even tougher spot than I was back in, you know, 5-6 years ago.
Yeah. And kind of your experience and getting out of that, and I'm sure we'll reflect on some of this as we speak, but I mean, that sort of got you into really focusing on bringing awareness to schools and teachers and leaders in schools and even boys?
Sure. Well, you know, it's been an interesting thing to watch develop the past year and a half of getting to appear on more campuses and then speaking to schools, primarily high schools. To me, it shows just the necessity of it, but also the lack of authority figures in the space that are younger that can make connections to young men, because I'll speak and then, you know, you see guys in the audience nodding or, you know, looking at one kid in particular and say, oh, we know exactly what he is talking about. And so I believe it's all purposeful, you know, as devastating as it was to become addicted to gambling. Clearly, it's shown that there's some good that can come from it on the other side of it.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a good segue, I think, into what I want to explore first with you. And I think what struck me as we were talking first is I wasn't really aware, I think, of how much of an issue this was with young boys and young men. And I actually met with some past colleagues of mine here in South Africa involved in a boys' school. And I said to them, I'm having this interview with you and we're going to be speaking about online gambling. And immediately, you know, three of them are involved in boarding, one's involved with Day Scholars, and all four of those colleagues or ex-colleagues of mine immediately jumped on and said, yes, this is huge. We're seeing this really impact boys. And so it just confirmed that having this conversation with you is important. In your experience of this, how widespread would you say online gambling is among young boys? And what unique challenges might boys' schools face in addressing the issue?
So I can pull out some data from my back pocket here. I know 2023, I believe it was, the National Council on Problem Gambling did a survey, and they said between 60 and 80% of high schoolers had gambled in the past year, just in some capacity. And that was across all genders, all, you know, ethnic makeups, just high school age students. But when you talk about boys specifically, I think the sports betting is what really stands out to me as being the primary focus, the primary target that a lot of these young men are participating in. I mean, they're also participating from just anecdotally hearing in stock market day trading as a form of gambling, you know, participating in apps like Robinhood, which facilitate day trading transactions. Some of them, of course, are doing cryptocurrencies, that sort of stuff. But when you ask what challenges do these schools have in addressing it, my first thought is just how culturally embedded this seems to be in boys' circles. And so when you try to get young men to stop or at least control the behavior, I believe you really have to penetrate the whole framework of these social groups, because it's become trendy and cool to be a degenerate gambler. And so my approach when I go present at a school is not to be unrealistic and do the whole, you know, drugs are bad, whatever, where no one's ever going to gamble, because I don't think that's realistic. And the numbers show that that is not realistic, that they're all going to go home and delete their fantasy leagues. I want them to be aware of where it can lead. I want them to know exactly what to look out for, so that if there's a problem, when there inevitably is a problem, they can have that conversation with friends or with faculty. And it's great, because a lot of the questions at school is the kids will say, well, what do I tell my friend who is down whatever amount of money? And so, long-winded answer to say that whole cultural aspect, I think, is the toughest thing to breach through. But I think it is possible with the right tools, the right engagement. I think kids can take a look at their own behavior and make some more informed decisions.
I suppose with boys, that whole element of competition comes into it as well. You know, when, you know, even, you know, who wins the most? And if boys are doing it together, there's that sense that they probably egg each other on in the process, right?
Oh, totally. I mean, I can even tell you from my high school before we had all this complex online stuff, we had guys that would go in the locker room and bet on flipping a Gatorade bottle into a recycling bin. And they would do exactly what you said. They'd egg each other on, double or nothing, or Cato's so and so, $1,000, and they're going to hype each other up. And so you're right, there is that camaraderie, there is that competition. And the advertising certainly has made that known of like get some skin in the game. You gotta compete against your buddies, and they really make it seem like such a social endeavor. But in the case of addiction, it can really be so isolating. So I let them know.
So, I mean, there are the obvious financial risks for boys, but there are also possibly less obvious impacts of youth gambling on individuals, on boys, and the ripple effect across possibly a school community. What kind of insight do you have in terms of those risks?
Well, sure. You know, the first thing that really shocks people is how high the prevalence is of suicide with gambling addiction. I've read a few reports that says up to 20% of addicted gamblers will attempt suicide because of just how hopeless they are. They're pushed to the brink through the lying, the financial devastation. They lose relationships, and still that compulsion to gamble persists. So you have that obvious problem there if you have students who are suicidal as a result of gambling. I mean, that's just absolutely tragic. But you know, beyond the finances, think of just all the different variables that come into play. Like people lose time due to their gambling. You know, people, I know, like skipping class, missing assignments, showing up late, you know, because they're gambling all the time. Losing time mentally too, and I talk about that a lot, of not being mentally engaged or present because so much of the focus is on the betting or the bookies or what lie do I have to tell someone or who do I owe money to? And so that becomes just a totally consuming mental problem. I mean, losing sleep.
Yeah, I suppose keeping track of that, because you've got to keep track of all those lies, all those people you owe money to, and that can be quite weighty. You were mentioning sleep. I mean, that's a huge thing for teenage boys.
Well, you know, the thing that's interesting about the whole gambling situation, I guess, is that in Gamblers Anonymous, and this is for people who are addicted, this isn't just for the social gambler, but they talk about the gambling career. That's the way that's phrased, is your gambling career, because it really is like working a full-time job, balancing everything and, you know, getting the credit and placing the bets. And so it's not just a little 2-minute side hustle or whatever. It's like, no, this is an all-consuming affair when you talk about gambling addiction. But it's interesting because you said, how does it affect communities? And I think it's important you say that because I think perhaps a school could say, well, we know we have these two kids who are really deeply involved in it, but it's not all the rest of the students. But you think of how two students gambling can affect the other students if they're trying to hit them up for loans or for money, or if, you know, the gambling student owes a bookie and the bookie is on campus and he poses a threat to the safety, and you know, it could affect other people as well.
Often I would think in a boys' school environment, because of my experience of it, I think sometimes adults in the room can be unaware of where the boys are at or what is actually going on. And what would your advice be to the adults in the room in terms of those factors that make boys vulnerable and recognizing those vulnerabilities?
Say a few vulnerabilities that I usually hone in on. First of all, the impulsivity. So I just did a webinar with a lady who is a gambling counselor for the Delaware Gambling Council, and she just had a plethora of data on this about young people with ADHD having a much higher prevalence of gambling. And then it was a like a bi-directional study. So the other way too, like gamblers were more likely to have ADHD, people with ADHD were more likely to be gamblers. So when you think of the most impulsive, those kids in your school that are getting in trouble because they blurt things out in class, they're impulsive, you know, those are high risk kids there. The other one that comes up is just the access. You know, thinking of students that have access to a lot of money, which the reality that I've seen at a lot of the boarding schools and boys schools where I've spoken is like pretty much everyone has access to a lot of money, which is certainly a risk factor, because if you have that money, you have that credit, you're able to take out a high credit line, you're able to play with a lot of money. One of the things that I think I've even picked up on from a lot of the schools where I've gone is just being more aware of the conversations that are taking place in the hallways, in the dorms, wherever it is, because a lot of these teachers and coaches say, well, in the locker room, they're all talking about it. That's all they talk about. And so having some sort of discipline or something related to that, I know a lot of schools where I've gone have not put in a policy in their handbook that pertains to gambling. And, you know, it's interesting because if schools are finally coming around to this issue and they're seeing it and they know who's a little more vulnerable, but they don't have anything in place, then it's like, okay, we're aware of this being a problem, but we're just watching the problem from the sidelines and we're, you know, not really doing much about it. So
I was just thinking of another vulnerability now while you were speaking, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, when I was growing up, if you wanted to gamble, you most likely had to go to a casino or a betting shop or whatever. And as an under 18 or under 21 year old or whatever it is in your region, here in South Africa, it was 18, you know, you weren't allowed into those spaces. But I think with a lot of the sports betting and betting on apps and online betting is that it is just so accessible for kids, no matter what age they are, you know?
Right. Yeah, no, it's a really good point. I know here in the US, so the majority of states that have legalized sports betting, the age is 21. There are 4 states where the legal age is 18. And then there's some, I believe, 12 states still that don't have legalized sports betting. But regardless of the state that you're in, it's very easy to access like offshore sports books, things that aren't sanctioned. They're not legal sports betting platforms. I've heard of a lot of students who will use, a parent will be the one that's actually using their own ID to set the kid up to be able to sports bet, because they think, well, you know, it's no big deal, it's whatever. So the parent is the one facilitating that, or they're using a fake ID. And so it's really so easy to access. And I think that can't be understated, because there could be some pushback that gambling's not legal in our state, so it's probably not happening. But I challenge that and say, you know, I'm sure it is happening, just maybe not legally.
Yeah. It strikes me as important. You know, you said, you know, one of the things that adults could do to recognize these things is really just to listen to boys talking. And if boys are talking in between class, or you pick something up in the locker room, like you said, you know, I think that gives us an opportunity as adults in schools to take steps to support and to help boys. And what I like about what you said earlier is you spoke about a culture, creating the kind of culture where you can alert boys to the dangers of gambling, online gambling, sports betting, but a culture too that recognizes that it's, you know, if you tell boys to stop gambling, it's probably not going to happen. You know, you need to create an opportunity for them to make those decisions for themselves. In your mind, what proactive steps could boys' schools take to create the kind of culture that discourages harmful engagements with gambling or gambling behaviors and promotes healthier alternatives?
I'd say the first thing that comes to mind is what is the school doing to either promote gambling or to, you know, raise awareness about the potential harm. And I say that because I know my school and a lot of schools will do things like a casino night, and they'll do that and then turn around and say, well, we discourage gambling behavior, but, you know, you just facilitated roulette, blackjack, and all that, and made it this fancy evening.
So I say, sort of a fundraising event or something like that. Right. Yeah.
So I think first, as a school to avoid being hypocritical in the messaging you send, like be intentional about your programming, because there's so many times of the year where gambling can just be so normal, like around March here in the US with March Madness, and everyone has a bracket and you might put in some money or win some prizes, and that, you know, is betting on basketball. So I say having that removed from the school culture. I'd say as well, just teaching students about the nature of gambling and about how it works with the odds and the financial aspect of it, because I hear a lot of the kids that say, well, I know sports, I think I'm going to make money with sports betting. So giving them some education on the financial nature of it. You know, I'm not one to be a huge salesman or anything, but I do believe that these sort of lectures, like the ones that I've been bringing to schools, I believe it is helpful, because hearing that voice firsthand of someone who's not a teacher, who's not lecturing, but is simply sharing and giving the students something else to think about, I believe is a very important tool, because that shifts the perspective. It gets people thinking a little differently.
And I suppose someone closer in age to them who has gone through this and has come out the other side with a broader perspective.
I'd say so. I mean, I get a lot of students who come up after and can relate to the content that I'm talking about, and deeper than just the sports betting or placing the bet, but how did that influence my socializing in school? How did I use gambling and misuse gambling to try to enhance my self-esteem? So I think having the gambling conversations in schools to go deeper than just talking about placing bets, but talking about how do we cope with life? How do we manufacture self-esteem in our friend groups and that sort of stuff is very important to paint the whole picture. But, you know, it's another thing to talk about what schools can do to be proactive. I believe when talking about gambling, it's important to talk about the whole picture of it, of, you know, what is investing? What does that look like for a healthy adult to put money away in the stock market? And, you know, you don't touch it for a few years versus what is day trading? How does it look like when an adult gambles socially versus someone who is out of control? Because I think, again, just saying, well, gambling as a whole is evil or whatever, it's like, you know, it's not to be taken super seriously if you're not telling the whole story and giving them the whole picture. So
what in your mind, you know, sort of, if you had to put yourself in the position maybe where there were folk around you who could have helped you when you were kind of in the midst of it, you know, if a school does identify a boy who is struggling with gambling, or a boy like that speaks to someone and says, hey, I'm in too deep, you know, what would you say those critical components of a support plan for that boy would be? And you know, are there ways schools can ensure access to resources to help a young person like that who really feels like they're on the edge?
I think that schools would be best off taking those sort of situations very seriously in terms of signposting a student to a therapist, therapy, whether that's a Gamblers Anonymous group. I know I've heard of a few GA groups that are specifically for young people. I would say that depends on the area, on the region. I know there's a whole online database of virtual meetings that I've seen young people attend where they're more comfortable attending. But I would say, you know, a support plan would probably be comprised of some sort of therapy, whether that's, you know, seeing a therapist, going to some sort of rehab, because there are, you know, rehab centers for gambling, that sort of stuff. But I'd say the school would also want to include the parents or the guardian, whoever, in that conversation, because I'd say the big problem for me was that my parents oftentimes were bailing me out financially, and they didn't really recognize what the implications were of my behavior. So say getting parents on board and having instructions for parents of, hey, don't bail out your kid who owes a lot of money. Let them experience that consequence, because that'll drive them quicker into recovery or you know, stopping. So making it a whole family situation, the therapy, I'd say. You also would probably, I'd say, enact some sort of discipline if it's in violation of school guidelines. I mean, it's the same way with drugs, it's the same way with alcohol, right? If you're caught with beer on campus and you're underage, you get suspended or you have some sort of punishment put in place. So say it doesn't need to be overcomplicated or anything. I'd say, you know, finding that mix of punishment as well as support would be helpful.
Yeah. And I think what you mentioned there is so important around, you know, teachers can often, and leaders in schools can often recognize where boys need help. But that whole idea of realizing, you know, this is bigger than me. We need to reach out to someone who has experience in helping people through this kind of addiction, just like you would if someone in your school was struggling with a drug addiction or something else like that. I like as well, Saul, that you talk about bringing parents into the conversation. You know, it just made me think of, you know, do you think schools have a role too in exposing parents to what's happening in the world of sports betting and online gambling, and alerting them to what to look out for?
Oh, absolutely. I found that the parents are always just amazed by how deep this issue runs, and they think, well, it's, you know, it's not something high schoolers or middle schoolers are dabbling in, and they find out really the extent of it and what they can do to continue the conversation with their child. And I think it's needed, it's essential, because that disconnect is it's really a shame if the student now has something to think about and they have this whole great assembly and this different perspective and all that, and then they go home and they ask all these questions about their gambling and the parents just like, well, I have no idea, or hey, maybe it's not really that big a deal, you're overreacting, and then the kid is, you know, buried in this gambling and the parent dismisses it. So I'd say to have it be a whole family affair is really important.
So then if we consider the adults in a boy's life, so we've spoken about parents, obviously teachers, advisors, whoever it might be in a school context, if you had sort of one important word of advice that you would give to teachers and other adults who want to help prevent or address gambling problems that the boys in their lives might be faced with, what would that advice be, Saul?
You know, I would say my advice is be realistic. I'll expand on that. I know that was very vague, but I'd say be realistic in the sense of what can be done in the immediate present. My goal when I deliver talks is, well, you know, I hope that maybe if someone goes home and deletes their app because they say, oh, I could see where this is headed, that would be great. But my hope is really that it plants a seed, planting a seed in the mind of someone to where when they see that this is turning south, now they think back to what they heard. And now they say, hey, I know where to go for help. And so I've had a few of these messages on my speaking Instagram page where someone said, hey, you spoke at my school last year, like a year ago. And I'm wondering, what do you make of this? Like, the kid was struggling with the idea that because he's watched sports since he was 6 years old, why can't he become a professional sports bettor just based on that? And we had a conversation. And so that's my hope, is that educators, leaders can say, hey, we're taking some steps here to really get it in their minds, so now they have something to think about and we're preventing it in the long term, and it's not something that will likely happen overnight. Because, you know, for a lot of these kids, like for me, it took a couple years to really say, oh gosh, you know, my life is about to end because of how deep in this I am. So it doesn't happen overnight. And likewise, that fix doesn't happen overnight. It's just an ongoing process.
Yeah. So Saul, I know you've spoken at a number of IBSC schools. If if schools, particularly in North America, but I'm sure you would be willing to do some online sessions as well. You know, if there are schools who are interested in engaging with you, how would they get hold of you? What's the best way to reach out?
Sure. So I have a webpage, which is just my name. It's Saul, S-A-U-L, Malik, M-A-L-E-K.com. I'm on LinkedIn. You know, my email is just my name, just Saul@SaulMalik.com. So there's a number of ways I'm out there.
Thank you for being out there, and thank you for the work that you're doing. And I think just a credit to you too for having gone through what you've gone through and turning that into something that has impact, you know, beyond your experience. I think you've opened our mind to how deep this problem really is, that it's something that as educators of boys, we need to be aware of. We need to be intentional about listening for, we need to be intentional about addressing, and we need to be intentional about supporting boys and helping them to have information about where this can lead, but also support those boys who really feel like they're struggling and out of control. So I've really enjoyed this conversation with you. Thank you so much for being willing to speak to us.
No, thank you, Bruce. It was really a pleasure having this conversation with you.
As we've heard from Saul, online gambling and sports betting pose significant risks to boys, from financial devastation and mental health struggles to impacts on their education and overall well-being. It's vital that we, as educators and leaders in boys' schools, recognize the prevalence of this issue, understand the vulnerabilities boys face, and take proactive steps to create a supportive and informed environment. Remember, fostering open conversations, providing education, and connecting students with resources are key to addressing this challenge. Until our next episode, keep on championing boys' education.